This is episode number 17 of the Paleo Women Podcast. Hey friends, we're so happy you're here with us again today. I'm Noelle Tarr, nutritional therapy practitioner and author of everything you'll find at coconutsandkettlebells.com. And I'm here with Stephanie Ruper, author of the best-selling book, Sexy by Nature, PCOS Unlocked and Weight Loss Unlocked. And she is the brilliant one behind paleoforwomen.com. Please keep in mind our disclaimer. The information on this podcast is intended to provide helpful and informative material and should be considered a substitute for medical advice or treatment of any kind. Shout out. What's up? I figured I'd give your website a little bit of a represent since I haven't in a while.
Please go to my website. I'm just kidding. Shameless. If you don't want to go, I don't care.
Shameless.
Seriously, do what makes you happy. It's fine. It's totally fine. Whatever. I don't need you. I don't need any of you.
The emotions that all just happened right there. You went from begging to being like, whatever. Don't need
you. Well, okay, so rule number one. Oh, so my one of my best friends and I, we go dancing together every night. That's right. That's right, ladies. Every night of the week, we go dancing together. And we have a lot of experience interacting with many different creatures of the opposite sex. And we are currently writing... oh, crap, I can't say it! Sorry. Okay, so you know how on How I Met Your Mother, they have a bro Bible? Well, we're writing one for women, and it rhymes. And I don't think I can say it on the podcast because we're not explicit. But it's the something Bible. And it's two letters. Okay. Go ahead. Figure that one out. Tell me if you figure it out in a review of the podcast. Anyway, I'm working on this Bible. And rule number one, commandment number one is, like, thou shalt not ask first ever. Right? So that's what I was just doing just then, is demonstrating to you my indifference, because you won't like me if I demonstrate neediness. You'll only like me if I'm aloof and really cool. So, like, whatever, you know, it's like, whatever.
I accept you and like you regardless.
I don't need you.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I need Noelle. I don't need a lot of people or a lot of things, or I might pretend like I don't, but I'm fully willing to own up to that one. I rely heavily on Noelle Tarr. Yeah.
So you have a lot of best friends too. Or is this the best friend that lives with you?
I would say that I have three or four. If I'm counting you in that list.
Do you know what the definition of best is though?
Well, yes. Could I pick one out of the three or four as like the ultimate best? Actually, yeah, I think I could.
You're so inclusive.
I couldn't. I could pick two. I get two.
So what is going on? What are you doing with your life? Anything? I haven't talked to you in a while.
Am I doing anything? I'm dancing way too much.
Is that what's going on?
That's what's going on. It's a problem. So I'm going back to school in the fall, as everybody knows, because I won't shut up about it. And I kind of thought that I would like dance a lot and get really sick of it. So then when I went back to school, I wouldn't like have to anymore. But it turns out that the more you dance, the more you love it, because you get a lot better at it and you make better friends, and it keeps getting better. And I'm also in this huge rush to get like as good as I possibly can before I go back to school, because all of a sudden now I'm really panicked that I like chose the wrong career and I should be teaching dance instead of going back to school. So I'm having all this like panic. And so I on Saturday, so a couple days ago, I woke up from having danced until, you know, 2 on Friday night. And then I woke up and went to a special class with a expert in this one particular thing from 1 to 4. And then I went and I danced Zouk at a park in Boston from, I had to drive, so then I was there from 5 to 7, and then I went to another class from 7 to 9, and then I went to a social from 9 to 12, and then I drove back to Boston and I did salsa from 12 to 2. So
I think you have a problem.
Oh, I know.
You need an intervention. Yeah, what it sounds like you're describing is like the perfect obsession with a sport. Like triathletes, yes, or CrossFitters or whatever. Like, you just can't get enough of it.
Well, I'm refueling properly.
That's good. Are you? You know that includes sleep?
Yeah, well, I slept 10 hours on Saturday night. Wow. I woke up at 2 p.m. on Sunday.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so, well, there's that. And, I mean, I don't do that every single day. That was, you know, yesterday, Sunday, I only danced 4 hours. So that was a good break.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem. I have no problems. I'm awesome.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think, yeah.
I'm very happy.
I know. I'm happy for you. I think that's great.
But I do need to figure out how to manage and transition and all that stuff, which I'm sure I will.
You will. Live in the moment for now. I mean, you are going back to school and that's going to change it a lot, so. And that's fine. We all go through different phases of different times of different things. So,
I don't want to be an adult. Don't make me.
You never have to be an adult.
Yeah. Well, I always used to say that I want to be an adult, but I never want to be a grown up.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of felt like a good distinction to make. Because I would like, you know, I feel like I'm a reasonably responsible, accountable human being.
Yeah.
I try. But anyway. How are you?
I'm good. I'm trying. I think I told you about this before, but it's been crazy. I've told you that it's been crazy, but all my weekends are filled with like trying to prepare for this. I'm just gonna get my personal training certification, which it's not that complicated, but it's been a long time since I've been in school, and like I know that they're gonna have they ask very specific questions and they want specific answers. I'm taking it with the National Strength and Conditioning Association, so if anybody's ever taken that, they can feel free to email me any little tidbits or help. But I need to just take it and get it over with. So I've been trying to go through and figure out what the things are that they want to hear and like how I need to spit information back to them, because it's one of the more difficult tests that you take. And I'm not going to spend $400 to take it and then not get it. Plus, I'm a perfectionist. So if I get, you know, I expect to get most of the questions right.
Right. Well, the thing is, if you're a perfectionist and you expect to go in and get like a 95%, then if you like really, really bomb it, for your standards, you're still going to pass.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But I also want to, I feel like having a really good base of like what the general industry as a whole says about things is really beneficial to have, so that then I know how to describe things to people in other ways, if that makes sense. So just people have very heavy preconceived notions when it comes to the world of fitness and form on certain things, and there's a lot of misconceptions and there's a lot of general advice that isn't really that great of advice, and a lot of things have changed. And so like a lot of the industries that do like a lot of the certifications are very behind, you know, in what they recommend and all of the things. So because we all know in the past 10 years we've had all these cool studies that say a lot of different things, but also a lot of different training has resulted to in the last 10 years. So anyway, I'm trying to become, I'm not just trying to study just to pass the test. Like, I want a definite understanding of what the industry as a whole is like saying and telling people, other personal trainers in general. So that's my life right now. I've been, yeah, just,
wow.
I don't really have one actually. So,
aww.
Yeah, except you and this podcast. That's my social hour.
Should we go on and talk about something that people actually want?
Please,
to
we have
about?
Some awesome questions today, so we are, and we're
get ready.
We are like on today to talk about.
Hold on to your pants, audience.
This is going to be a little bit of a ride. Welcome. Please keep your hands inside the car.
We do not have seatbelts.
No seatbelts here. Question number one is from Samantha. Hi, Noelle and Stephanie. I love your show and I would really like a bit of perspective. I'm 26. I was diagnosed with PCOS when I was 20 and was put on hormonal birth control. 2 years ago, I came off of it, and through a real food diet and strength-based exercise, I now have regular periods and my weight has stabilized. Yay, me! My endocrinologist is happy with all of my numbers, but suggests that I could still stand to lose some weight if that was something I wanted to do. I'm 5'6 and 160 pounds. She said just not to go below 136. I'm fit. I'm happy with my body most of the time, but I feel this pressure to try and lose weight. I've been focused on my strength goals and just trying to be a stable human being while doing my PhD, but the weight question catches up with me from time to time. I'm having tiredness issues, which I can't get to the bottom of, so I'm certainly not actively trying to lose weight. Do I just ignore my endocrinologist and keep doing what I'm doing, or is there a case for trying to drop that weight? I just don't know whether trying to quote-unquote lean out, as some of my CrossFit friends talk about, is in my best interest. Thanks for all your help, Samantha.
Heck yes, you ignore your endocrinologist. Oh my god, I can't even. How exciting for you that you, like, you did the things. You got off hormonal birth control, which is hard anyway, and you had PCOS, and you used your diet and your relationship with your body to sort of come into better peace with it, and now you have regular periods, your weight has stabilized, you said yay me. These are awesome things. When I first saw this question, I sent Noelle a message, and I said, let me go get my soapbox. I'm like, fit and happy with your body, you feel good. I imagine, like, you didn't tell us, but I imagine that your blood results are probably pretty good. You know, I don't think, if you got a blood test back and it said that maybe your testosterone levels were still high, maybe you had some markers of inflammation, maybe, I can't even come up with, like, some good things. Maybe if you had, like, high triglyceride or LDL cholesterol numbers, like, maybe then I would say, okay, like, let's, like, try and see if we can get your weight dialed in. 5'6 and 160, and if you work out a lot, like, I'm totes cool with that. Super, I think Noelle is super cool with that, right? Like, isn't that kind of in the neighborhood of where you hang out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, girl. Yeah.
Yeah, get it. And Noelle's super hot, so I'm not worried.
I'm huh. Definitely not worried. Yeah, no.
Definitely. So, I feel so happy for you. And you're, like, in school and you've got something else to focus on and you're not spending all of your time hating on the way that you look and you feel good about your fitness level and your energy. Like, I see zero reason for you to try to lose weight. Unless your doctor gave you a reason. If she can't give you a reason, then boo hiss. And that's, like, I should draw those out more. Boo. Like, just really put a lot of S's in there.
I'm editing that out.
Come on. Okay. Okay. People should not hit. If you don't want to lose weight and you're healthy, and it seems to me like this is definitely within the range of a healthy weight, and even if you're high on the BMI index, a little bit on the high end, I have a feeling that's because you've got some good musculature on you, you know, and you are probably not a super, like, stickly kind of woman. I'm trying to come up with an adjective that, you know, I won't be lampooned for. You're probably not, like, super thin, but whatever. I'm not super thin and I'm super stoked about it. You know, like, let's just all embrace our bodies the way they are and be excited about the progress we've made and all the healing we've done. And boom, the soapbox is staying up, but I'm going to pass the mic.
Okay. You can pick up if I further your emotion. But so we could fire each other up. I know that that could happen. So at first I was thinking, maybe what was your endocrinologist? What was she basing this off of? What were these? Like she said, you could still stand to lose some weight. So maybe that there was something there in your numbers that she thought that that could be helped by losing a few pounds. But you just said she's super happy with your numbers. So where does that come in? Yeah, she said her endocrinologist was very happy with her numbers. So she's very happy. You're in within a healthy range. I presume she's asked you about your diet and about your exercise levels, and she knows that you are working out, you're doing the strength training, you're eating real food, but yet she says this to you? She says you could still stand to lose weight? I don't quite understand that, especially at 5'6 and 160 pounds. And I'm 5'6". I have this identity crisis. I'm like 5'6". I'm almost 5'7". I'm like 5'6 and a half. Told this to Stephanie before. So I hate saying that I'm 5'6". But I'm like 5'6 and a half-y, you know, like almost 5'7". And
does it sound cooler to you to say that you're 5'6 and a half?
Yeah, it does. Who's 5'6 and a half? Like, no one. Nobody ever says that.
Yeah, that's a really clear signal of self-esteem.
I'm just trying to be honest about myself. Yeah. Okay? This is me. Yeah. And I typically range about 150, but I can be more depending on my cycle and depending on like the time of day. Like, I mean, I could be 5-7 pounds more than that. So I at 5'6", 160 pounds, it's kind of baffling to me to be like, oh yeah, you could stand to lose some weight. I just don't understand it. And what she's not taking into account, or what people are not taking into account in general is the stress that you put on your body when you're trying to take it to a lower weight from a weight that you've stabilized, and you've done that so by eating real food and lifting. Like, you're so excited about it. I would stay excited about it. I think that the fact that your weight has stayed there and I'm not saying that you're never going to lose weight again. Like, I think that maybe your body is kind of stabilized right here, and maybe you still have a little bit of stress, or you still have, you know, another year or two down the road. If you start introducing some sprint workouts or other type of training, you could very well see a difference in your body fat percentage. So you could be gaining, the more you train, the more you do sprint training, the more you lift, and the more you become proficient in that, you could you could develop more muscle and lose more fat. Maybe your weight would stay the same. So I'm not saying that could never happen, but I think that your body is stabilized here and you're happy is awesome. And I would rather you not subject your body to more stress. So most of the time it takes more extreme measures, like restricting nutrients or working out more. And while both of those things expose your body to more physical stress, the real danger is in the mental and the emotional stress that can occur, right? So, I mean, many women, as the result of trying to get to a weight or a shape that is defined to us as the desired look or what we perceive as the healthy weight that we should be, we start to do unhealthy things to get there. And sometimes it's really hard to see that happening. And it really starts with situations like these. Like, we see the way other people look, or somebody says something to us, like, you could stand to lose weight. And then we're like, okay, well, maybe I should, because that's what I need to do to be healthy. And that's what everybody else around me looks like. And these are what the people in the magazines look like. And they're, you know, that's the definition of healthy. So this is the way I should look. And although it's kind of perceived initially as like a healthy initiative, then you create these goals for yourself based on what other people are saying or what other people look like. And you start to feel like something is wrong when you can't achieve that goal, or if you start to go crazy when you do try to achieve the goal. So, I mean, it's just really easy to lose perspective that our body is unique and individual and we should be treated as such. And I just wish that your doctor would see that you're not a number, that you're not somebody within a range, and that because your BMI is this specific number, which BMI, give me a break. Like, can we just throw that away already? But because like you're within this like BMI range of overweight, which by the way, I am too at 5'6 and 150. I am technically supposed to be in this overweight category, that now all of a sudden I'm unhealthy, like, or that I'm going to get heart disease. Like, I it's just really frustrating. And not many people are talking about how women have developed such an unhealthy relationship with their bodies. Obviously we are, right? But not a lot of people talk about it. And I just feel like there are so many women that are dealing with situations like these, that they have unrealistic expectations. And so, I mean, we can't tell you what to do. I mean, we can, right? We just did. But I think it's a decision that you need to make.
She asked us to.
I know. It's a decision, however, that you need to make for yourself, because we can't say, no, 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 don't listen to your doctor. Ignore her. You have to decide and be empowered and to do that for yourself, because only you can. And I think it's just so frustrating, because we've just been fed that so much, and so much is so much is playing into the idea that, like, there's so much talk about the obesity epidemic. And I know, yes, that, like, we have a lot of overweight people and a lot of people who have too much weight on them, and it's a problem, right? And we can say a lot of things about that. But now there's this large majority of people that believe that if you aren't a size 6 or you don't look like Jillian Michaels, you are unhealthy and your weight is going to kill you and it's bad. And it's my personal belief that the weight is a side effect, and it only happens in tandem with other disease states. So the weight is not the cause, and the research is showing that. Yes, weight can precipitate, like, belly fat. We found that belly fat is bad, and that specific type of weight is a biomarker of, like, or will means that you're more inclined to get certain diseases. So I'm not denying that. I'm just saying that usually it's not all of a sudden that all this weight is what's causing the disease. It happens in tandem or as the result of disease states. Mm-hmm. So even if you are in the upper end of the overweight category.
I just put this into the BMI calculator.
Yeah.
And it's 25.8, and overweight is anything above 25.
Yes.
Which I can only say boo hiss.
There you go again, huh?
I'm going to put me in there and see what I come up with.
Yeah.
Sorry, I wanted to give you the number. Keep ranting. I loved it. Keep going.
No, that's true. But even if you were in this overweight, this like BMI overweight category that we for some reason all have decided to use as gospel, that doesn't mean you're destined to be unhealthy or have heart disease. We've talked about this before. Studies are showing that just simply getting yourself out of the low fitness category does way more for your health and the ability to remain disease free than if you're within the normal weight category and then have no fitness. So, like, many overweight people who are doing their thing, doing the CrossFit thing. So when I say overweight, I'm not saying you are over the weight. I'm saying you're quote unquote overweight. So that would be me included. So there are many overweight people who are doing their thing. They're healthy, they're strong, they're eating right, they're lifting, they have a good fitness capacity. They are way more healthy than normal people who don't work out and eat, just are eating the typical American diet or just very naturally thin. Okay. And so some docs are incredibly knowledgeable and very helpful, and they know this, but others aren't. And they're just people. And so I want you to be empowered and to know that you are the most experienced expert when it comes to you and what is worse and what is working for you and your body. So it seems like you've already done that. You've already taken responsibility for your health in tremendous ways. You've done all these awesome things, and your weight has stabilized, and you're active and you're lifting weights. And so I think you should just do you, like, and make that decision based on how you feel. You're dealing with a little bit of tiredness, so fatigue probably wouldn't be, you're exactly right, it would not be the best idea to all of a sudden reduce your calories and increase your exercise right now. That doesn't seem like a very logical thing to do. So I would absolutely just work on sleep, work on nourishing your body, and continuing to take care of yourself. And oh my gosh, I'm going to have to say this, but leaning out.
I can't even, but I choose not to. I do not even.
Like, okay, I'm not saying being lean isn't great, right? Like, it's awesome. Like, it's a term I use to describe myself, because lean usually means I'm a very muscular person. So, like, lean, you have muscle, and great, cool, lean. It's great to be lean. But lean, like, when people say I'm trying to lean out, it's usually just an excuse for obsessive and compulsive behavior. that enables you to control your body and look the way you think you're supposed to look. Nobody really says it in relation to trying to get healthy. Like, I really want to work on my health, and I'm leaning out right now. Like, I really need to lean out.
Like, yeah, I've never heard somebody focus on health say they're trying to lean out.
So, right. But for high-level and professional athletes, sure. Being at a competition weight, being very lean is important. You move faster, you perform faster, and if you're making your money off of that and you've chosen that lifestyle for yourself, awesome. But that doesn't mean it's healthy. And most people who do that have times of not being lean, and they have to refuel and almost heal their body from being at that extreme. And most people are just using the term as an excuse to overtrain and to underfeed. And we know that leads to a whole lot of cortisol and HPA axis dysregulation and lack of period and thyroid issues, which there's nothing healthy about that. So, of course, I'm not saying leaning out is bad. Like, all the leaning out folks, I love you. Like, don't come after me. I'm just saying, like,
come after me.
A lot of people use that as an excuse. Or do they not? Like, a lot of the people were people like me 6 years ago, who were using that as, I really need to lean out. I used to say that all the time, like, especially for triathlon training, like, oh, I need to cut weight. I really need to cut weight. Like, what? No. What?
You know what's really, it's really interesting, because I think the phrase lean out, like, it has a little bit of a technical connotation. Like, so I wonder if it sort of gives people an excuse, right? So it sort of says, like, well, I'm in the... It sort of validates your body as it is, right? So say you're a little bit puffy, jiggly. You're a little bit jiggly like me. And I'm like, well, I just need to lean out. It makes me sound like it's like, well, like, no big deal. Like, I just need to lean out. I know all of this stuff. I can lean out. Like, I'm really fit. It's a choice, right? It's sort of...
yes, it's an excuse.
It's an excuse, but it's not like... It sort of paints you into this, like, picture. It makes you seem like you're in the fitness industry, and you're like, oh, I'm just leaning out because that's what we do.
You're doing like the elite, yeah, the elite higher level thing.
And the thing is okay. So I used to. People would say, wow, well, you know, those, like, you work out as much as like an Olympic athlete, and I'd be like, yeah, of course I do, because I want to be the best. I'm like awesome. You know, and people would say on podcasts, well, you shouldn't do this unless you're going for like a really elite thing. And I'd be like, well, I am going for a really elite thing. Okay, well, sure, I guess if you really want to, but if going for that really elite thing is just like an excuse for you to be really skinny.
Yeah, or no, whatever. It's like, not. No. People, this isn't understood. This is not rocket science. Like, elite athleticism isn't healthy. You take your body to very heavy extremes, and it right. has to be followed up with extreme rest and recovery and a lot of like tinkering and things like that you wouldn't even imagine to help people recover from some of the extreme training that they do. And so then you get into this mentality, this unhealthy mentality of go, go, go. And well, yeah, of course I train 2.5, 3, 4 hours a day. Like, so what? Olympic athletes train 6 hours a day. Like, why? And I was right there. I had that exact same rationalization in my head. And again, it's just more excuses to feed into this behavior that you know isn't necessarily healthy for you, but you just have to do because you're covering up things like being insecure with your body or, you know, trying being a all of the yeah. things. I can't even. It's just,
you know, while we're sort of body imaging, I saw a video, you know, there's a lot of body image video things these days. I saw one yesterday that was kind of powerful for me because she said, it was an Australian woman, and she's kind of famous now and she has a bit of a thing, especially over there. But when she realized how unhappy she was with her body and all this stuff, she asked other women if they could pick one adjective to describe their body, what would it be? She asked 100 women. Okay, and only one woman said something positive. She said luscious, and she, like, had severe Down syndrome. And every single other woman said something self-deprecating.
every single 99 women said
like
a negative.
Jiggly, I mean, so far as the video indicated, like jiggly, fat, disgusting. A lot of women said disgusting. I can't even. And you know what? I like at very many points in my life, the word I would have chosen or would have been disgusting. I don't know what I would say now, but I encourage everybody out there to think about what word they would say, like one word, and then do what you can to fix it, because I'm pretty sure there's a decent chance it's a negative one.
But that just breaks my heart. What good does that do? Being
Seriously.
Negative and like just hating on yourself, like what good could come out of that?
Well,
and if we're all
it's not their fault.
But if we're all women who all have very unique and varying bodies, I can promise you that 99.9% of the bodies out there don't look like magazines that you see, first of all, because they're photoshopped. But second, I'm not saying anything's wrong with that body type of fashion models, but that's what we see all the time. So that's what we think we have to look like. Like, I just don't understand it. I do understand it because I've been there. But your body is so much more than like the stretch. Like, I have stretch marks all over, but
yep.
That's, I'm the only one that sees that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's a problem. So like, if I don't think it's a problem, if I don't find myself disgusting, or if I don't think that what, you know, if I build this self-confidence in myself and the way I look, then other people are going to believe that. So it starts with you.
Yeah. As I'm going to go ahead and quote myself from a few podcasts back. If you act like you're hot stuff, you are hot stuff.
You are hot stuff. Yeah.
If you act like you're hot stuff, you are hot stuff. But all of which is to say, I mean, well, we could soapbox again about the media and the way that they make us feel about ourselves. And it's within our power to change that. And in some ways, it is our obligation to each other and to future generations to do so. I really strongly believe that, and that's why I'm so fierce on it myself. But it's not our fault that we feel that way. But once we recognize that we do, I do believe that it's kind of our responsibility to do something about it for our sake, to make ourselves happier, and for the sake of other women. You know, we have to do this together,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, if we spend the whole time tearing each other down, tearing ourselves down, like, we're just going to keep up that culture of judgment and fear, and you know,
it's not easy.
No, it's not easy, and it takes a long time and a lot of forgiveness and a lot of deep thinking and all that sort of thing.
Self-reflection, yeah.
And then hopefully you get to a place where you don't really think about your body much at all anymore, and you get to focus on things like, I don't know, love, relationships, work, justice,
charity
happiness,
work, yeah, like
laughter,
taking care of issues or people that are in need. Like, there's just so much else out there that needs to be thought about. And I'm not saying that women are selfish if they hate themselves. Like, I get it. Like, I've been there, and
right,
it's
and you're trapped. It's not your fault. You're
and it's
trapped.
Not like women, I don't think women generally want to feel that way either. So,
right.
I just want everybody to, I want everybody to listen to this podcast so we can teach them otherwise. Let's move on to the second question, because
This one's
been
good,
like,
too.
25 minutes. Hi, ladies. You are both such a joy to listen to. I can't decide between Team Noelle or Team Stephanie, but I have learned that I know the wrong Rupert. Stephanie is way cooler than Clark. Now that the important things are out of the way, I want to hear what you ladies think about shifting the composition of diet and exercise over the course of a woman's menstrual cycle. Women have a natural cycle that affects our hormones, and certainly food, exercise, sleep, and other things also play a role in that. Would it be appropriate to shift these factors over the cycle? And if you know, what might that look like? Say, making sure to eat more healthy fats leading up to ovulation, or eating carbs or fewer carbs during other phases, doing less endurance exercising during menstruation, et cetera, et cetera. What are your thoughts on this? Thanks, Angela.
Hi, Angela. We have so many thoughts about so many things. I'm going to go ahead and talk about me first.
Surprising.
To be honest, I want to say it, and then I want to get it out of the way. My brother Clark is the most amazing person on the planet, and there's no chance there's no chance that I am cooler than him. So, yeah, she knows my brother Clark. He's a few years older than me, and he used to run this nonprofit in D.C. that did really amazing work, and he's so kind and inspiring and a brilliant out-of-the-box thinker, and I can't even. So, no, you know the right, Rupert. I'm a poser compared to Clark. So there's that. Moving on to the important things. Yeah, hormones have effects on a lot of things. So I guess we could talk about a lot. I think the most prominent way in, like, the most popular thing that people do with regards to their menstrual cycle, I mean, 100% of the time you want to be as healthy and nourishing as possible, right? So always try to sleep as well as you can, that sort of thing. Sleep might be a little bit harder at the beginning of the cycle because your hormone, your estrogen and progesterone levels are low, and estrogen is very helpful for sleep. So just know that generally. But the most popular thing that people do is time their carb eating and their kind of exercise based on whether they're in their first 2 weeks in the follicular phase, in which they're growing the follicles, or in the second 2 weeks in which you are in your luteal phase and you're getting ready to shed all of the stuff. So in the follicle phase, you start out with really low estrogen levels and your progesterone is low as well, but then your estrogen levels rise, moving towards ovulation. And then you ovulate, and then after that, your estrogen levels kind of go up and down a bit, but your progesterone comes up a lot. So you could look at the second half of the menstrual cycle as like kind of more progesterone dominant, and the first half is kind of more estrogen dominant, though it's more complicated than that. And progesterone tends to hinder carbohydrate and insulin signaling and metabolism a little bit. And so some women who are big on fitness and big on low-carb biohacking will try to go lower carbohydrate in the second half of what's going on, which hopefully for them will help them lean out. This is something that I talk about in my weight loss book a little bit, this like hacking thing. it's a subtle thing, right? Like, it's not going to be the thing that makes you lose 50 pounds. It's a subtle thing that people do use to like lean out in the fitness industry. But they will go lower carb in the second half and be a little bit higher carbohydrate in the first half of the menstrual cycle because the progesterone levels aren't that high and you've got some estrogen kicking around, and that sort of actually helps you with carbohydrate metabolism. And you can pair your exercise with this as well, and I could talk about it, but I think Noelle would probably talk about it a little bit more, with a little bit more detail than I would. So I'm going to pass the mic again.
Okay. So I actually like to think of the menstrual cycle in four phases. You'll see this, but I basically break up the first phase. And I know that this is a little bit complicated, so I'm going to keep reminding people where what phase does what, just quickly, because I know that when I first was hearing people talk about the phases, I was like, I just don't even know where we're at. So again, breaking up into four different phases kind of puts it over the course of a week for me, although it's not going to perfectly align, but bear with me. So menstruation happens, right? So the hormone levels drop. Steph just talked about this. Really, it is the follicular phase, but for this purpose, we're going to say menstruation. Yeah. So the second phase is follicular. It's what we're really looking at is the second half. That's when estradiol increases. We have this big kind of spike. Then we have ovulation. That's kind of the third phase in my, how I look at it. Luteinizing hormone and then follicle stimulating hormone spike. Estradiol starts to decrease. And then we have the luteal phase where the progesterone increases, estradiol does as well. And then they both, boom, drop. So you can think of the follicular phase as preparing for ovulation and then the luteal phase preparing for menstruation. So the luteal phase is really where these measurable changes occur. So you actually have a rise in your body temperature and you burn more energy. So the luteal phase, remember, is that second half of the cycle when we're preparing for menstruation. It's after ovulation. So this luteal phase is kind of where most of us experience that quote-unquote PMS. So think of that as well. So there are some people who, the biohackers, who, and I'm just not, I don't have anything against biohacking, but there are some people who talk about...
You don't?
I don't. I really don't. If you want,
I think you're about to say something in which
no,
you...
No, no. If you want to do it, do it. I love all people and whatever you choose to do with yourself. So there are some people who... talk about how estrogen and progesterone have an impact on fuel storage and fuel use. So estrogen, remember, first part of the cycle spikes. Progesterone spikes heavily in the second part. And estrogen does too. Estradiol does too. So there, before I get into that, the people, these people say, or what some of the general consensus has been, is estrogen helps with lipolysis, so you can burn fat a little bit better. You're in a much more insulin sensitive state. Mm-hmm. You can burn glycogen easy because you can tap into your muscle stores better. And then progesterone, the second half of the cycle, the luteal phase, you become more insulin resistant, and so you can store fat. You're in a more catabolic state. So with this thinking, it's okay, let's go super low carb in the second half of our cycle when progesterone is increased, and let's do all the hard training and within the first half, let's do all the hard training in the first half when estrogen's up and we can burn fat better. So I really, this is interesting because I've really been trying to look into this more deeply lately. And so I've had a couple weeks to just research this kind of stuff. And when this question came up, I was like, yes, this is awesome. But the study, every time somebody says something like this, I try to go and look at the studies that they quote, and I try to go find more studies about it, and they are just so few and far between, and they're not really, they don't come to any sort of conclusions. It's all speculatory. So they'll say things like, studies using animal models have shown estrogen increases lipolysis or decreases mm-hmm. carbohydrate availability. But the impact on fatty acid availability and utilization is unclear, and although not supported with human studies. So, like, we have all these this kind of verbiage that's like, oh, well, we don't really know. But for in general, we kind of know that this is what happens. And I just don't think there's enough evidence to actually... for the general population to take action. Sure, I mean, you can absolutely tinker, try doing certain things in your follicular phase versus your luteal phase in terms of the carbs that you eat. So maybe you could try going lower carb in your luteal phase. But I just think you're going to drive yourself more crazy than anything. I'm not saying it's not going to work or that there could be research that comes in months or years that validates this. And woohoo, we find this like awesome way for women to manage their weight better, and that could be awesome, but for right now, it's just so speculatory. I'm not necessarily on board because I know that what obsessing like this can do to your mental health. So I think it also would be interesting to see the difference in testing this theory on people who follow a more conventional, higher processed carb sugar intake and those who actually eat real food like us. And those who are better at oxidizing fat and we have healthy insulin sensitivity, we don't necessarily need. I'm more lower carb. I don't necessarily need sugar. Like I think that my body would respond much differently if I was actually tested in comparison to somebody who, or even in comparison to the person I was eight years ago when I was carb loading and eating bagels and pasta. So there are some studies that have actually looked at how the menstruation cycle, so menstruation in general, and these the phases that I just talked about affect women in their training. So I think it is valuable to mention some of this data. So there was one study. Let me first say, too, that there is just so little studies on this. I mean, really, there's just not a lot on that look at women and hormonal levels in general with training. So there's just a few. But there is one that looked at rowers, so endurance rowers, and that found that there was no change in performance in performance measures like oxygen consumption, so VO2, heart rate, power output, all of those things. There was no difference between the workout done in the follicular phase versus the luteal phase. But there also has been there was another study that looked at fatigue in relation to humidity and heat, and so it did find that the luteal phase, so is between like day 19 to 25. In hot and humid conditions, performance decreased. So, you know, I mentioned this before, the luteal phase, our core body temperature goes up and we burn more as a result. We burn more calories too. So having that higher core body temperature, you actually are going to, your training's going to be affected, especially in hot conditions. So we're not going to be able to manage our heat regulation as well. How they also did that exact same study in regular temperature, so not hot conditions, so controlled conditions, and it showed no difference. So it was a variable. The only variable that changed was the heat, and that did affect it. So that's something to think about, especially during summer training, and if you train outside. So the third study looked at responses of testosterone, and basically what they were trying to do was look at how anabolic hormones, so how anabolic hormones were spiked after training, and if that changed during or throughout the cycle. And so when I say the cycle, they basically, all of these studies just looked at testing activity or workouts in the luteal phase versus the follicular phase. And they found that no matter when training occurred and no matter when throughout the menstrual cycle, there was no change in the response of or how testosterone was elevated. So they found that the only real thing that came from this study was that the testosterone levels were higher in the post-workout window, so within 30 minutes after the workout, but it quickly dropped back to normal within that 30 minutes. So that's actually kind of controversial. Testosterone's response in general when it comes to training in women is just not even, I mean, there's like two studies that look at it, but some studies show no response at all. Others show very slight response. So we're not even sure of what role testosterone plays for women in general, like for workouts. But so I'm not totally sure if this study says much that we can really like depend on. But we can assume that anabolic hormones aren't necessarily affected. And then the last study was a study that looked at anabolic hormones in response to different phases of the menstrual cycle, but it actually compared healthy women versus women with menstruation disorders. This one was really interesting to me. So, and it found that women with menstruation disturbances has had a weakened anabolic hormone response, specifically growth hormone. So all the other hormones were the same, but the people with the unhealthy menstruation, so like conditions like amenorrhea, they weren't as well off because anabolic hormone, specifically growth hormone, were much lower, and they also had higher resting testosterone levels. So I think that what's interesting here is it matters about your health, so how already balanced your hormones are, and then if you're already dealing with certain conditions like amenorrhea or not. But so here's what I'm thinking, what you can do for your training and then fueling. We'll just wrap this up into a pretty package. First, chart your cycles. So get to know yourself. Make sure that you know when you are starting each week. I would just do this with like Google or Apple, like a calendar, just put it there. Okay, this is day one. So you get familiar with the length of your cycle. And if you do get a little bit of pain like I do on when you ovulate, chart that too. So you can kind of see the length of your follicular versus your luteal phase. And with your training, this is kind of, I sometimes do practice this because I find in particular my training absolutely sucks my first couple of days of menstruation, and especially even the last few days leading up to it. I'm just like not with it. And when I was training for a half marathon last year, it was I had like planned it horribly, and I didn't figure it out until I'd gotten like deep into the throes of my training. But like I was doing my long runs on the day before I was supposed to start my period, and I would always feel horrible, and I just couldn't regulate myself well, and I just had really low energy. So it is actually really important, especially if you have a goal and you're following a program, like a longer program. But in general, what that might look like is week one, I would actually start I'm actually going to start not on day one. I'm going to start on day 3 to 5 of your cycle. I would treat this like a building week. So you would do just kind of start to ramp up your intensity. So you would do, if you're doing lifting, for example, you'd do 3x5 at 75% of your one rep max. Okay. So week two would be this. This would be that follicular phase, that second half of the follicular phase. This is where you get after it. You make sure you're really eating post-workout because you do have some and well, we're speculating that you have increased insulin sensitivity, and you know, making sure that especially that you eat if you're training fasted. Up your carbohydrate intake to meet your needs because you are going harder, and you can do something like sprint training or harder interval training, or if you're lifting, do something like 5x5 at 75% of your one rep max. And week three, keep it heavy. I would do something like 3x3 at 85% of your one rep max. So you're decreasing your overall length that you're doing, but you're still keeping it heavy. And then that week four, this is like, okay, you're at the end of that luteal phase, you're about to start menstruation, and maybe even the first few days of menstruation, you deload. So you do light activity or walking, or you can do things that you have been doing like lifting, but maybe you just do lower intensity. So you drop the weight to like 50% of your one rep max, and you do like, I don't know, just a couple sets. So you can still keep doing the things that you do, but you just do it lighter. So in general, I like the idea because it does help you. Well, like, you can get really down on yourself, right, when workouts don't go right or you start to feel crappy. And it just gives you such a better knowledge of yourself and your performance capacity. And periodization is fantastic in general. I mean, if you're not aware of what that is, it's just a systematic process of planned variations. So you build, and then you back off. And it's really, really important to do that because it allows your body to recover, right? And it prevents things from happening like injury, and you become stronger. So you can have extended periods of time where you do certain types of training. So you typically have like an overarching couple, like 3 to 4 mesocycles throughout the year, and then you have these little microcycles that can last between 1 to 4 weeks. And so your menstrual cycle is like your perfect microcycle. So to me, it's the type of your workout doesn't necessarily matter. I mean, the type in terms of like what you do, it's more of the intensity. So think of it as like build, keep it strong and hard, and then deload. So that's what I think. That was really long.
Mm-hmm. See, I knew.
Are you still there?
I knew. Yeah, I knew. So
okay.
I'm glad I passed that on early.
I know. I think it's really interesting. I once I started kind of doing that, it took a lot of the pressure off because you're not on at all points, and you do feel crappy, and it's kind of like, okay, this is okay. This is what's going on in my body, and I'm going to adapt to that. And so, it's just knowledge. Knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power. Yeah. So that's listen to Noelle, right? Like that's the fitness thing. What about some other things? Like I said, your sleep is going to be maybe a little bit tougher when you're menstruating right in that first week that Noelle was talking about. Recovery, right? Your libido is going to be higher around when you ovulate. You know, maybe like in the second and third weeks of your menstrual cycle, your libido will be higher. So try and time your dates appropriately.
Gosh.
Or whatever, you know, I mean, if you're asking for how to optimize, those are some things. I don't know, if you're taking supplements, you take them every day, you could like time your supplement taking, but I don't see why, because even if you're taking it, like for example, magnesium and estrogen often work really well together. So you could time your magnesium supplementation only for when your estrogen levels are high. I just came up with this theory. I've never read any studies done about it. I'm sure nobody has studied it. And that way, because magnesium does compete with zinc and some other things in your body. And so that way you're not sort of like wasting your magnesium intake. But of course, it's effective in a lot of places without estrogen too. So I would keep most things the same. I think fitness is probably the big place. You could develop your own personal awareness. You know, your skin will be better and worse in different times of the cycle. It'll be the best in week 2 for just about everybody. When your estrogen levels are highest, your skin will be its best. So that's a real thing. I'm not sure what you would do about that, but maybe like be sure to stay away from foods that you know might give you some acne or whatnot in the other weeks. That's kind of it. Your pain tolerance is best when your hormone levels are higher. So there's that as well. That sort of covers all of it, you know? All of the stuff that would change the way in which you behave on a day-to-day basis. Boom.
Okay, so now we are going to, with our very limited amount of time, we're going to bring on a friend for our bonus section. So I'm going to jump off, bring her on, and then we are all going to have some girl talk. Are you ready for this?
Born ready.
Okay. Okay, so I think we're all here. Katie, you here?
I'm here.
Awesome. And Stephanie, you're just always there.
Obnoxiously, I am
Yeah,
always here.
totally. Totally. So we have brought on our super cool friend, Katie Coleman, that we met at Paleo FX. It was, I guess, about a month ago now. It seems a little bit longer ago than that, but it was about a month ago. And we all just clicked and we had a good time and we were just chit-chatting. And so I would love, Katie, if you could go ahead and tell everybody your story, like what you told us, and then we will get into having some girl chat and our bonus question.
Okay. Awesome. Well, so my story basically begins when I was 11 years old, so over 20 years ago now, which is crazy. I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, and type 1 diabetes is the rare autoimmune form of the disease where the body attacks the insulin-producing cells. And back then, we didn't really know what causes autoimmune diseases, and we're still to this day kind of learning that. But my body no longer produces any insulin, so I have to take it. And I wear an insulin pump that gives me insulin throughout the day, according to what my body needs. And I also have to monitor my blood sugar levels throughout the day. So over the years, I've really learned how different things affect those blood sugar levels, mostly food, but also exercise, stress, all that good stuff. And then in turn, how my blood sugar levels affect everything in my life. And it really does affect everything. All the things that we as paleo women talk about, sleep, energy, mood, hunger, exercise, hormones, all of that stuff is affected by blood sugar levels. And so growing up, the dietary recommendations were basically the standard ones: eat whole grains, low fat, and then artificial sweeteners. And I'd always loved to bake, so I would experiment with all of those things. And I actually, the first business that I started several years ago was actually a whole grain bakery business, and I was sold at farmers markets. I was fully on board the whole grain train. I was like, okay, this is what my doctor's telling me to eat, and this is what's supposed to be better for me. And I want it to be diabetes friendly, but also just better for everybody. And then as I was experimenting with creating recipes and seeing how those affected my blood sugar levels and just my body in general, I kind of realized, hey, these actually don't seem to be very healthy, and they don't really seem to be very diabetes friendly. And around that time, the gluten-free and the paleo thing were starting to happen, and I was learning more about all of those. So I started experimenting with recipes that had no grains at all. And those turned out to be much better for me, in my blood sugar levels, and they were gluten-free and paleo. So that's when I switched the business to all grain-free and changed the name to Keep It Real Food Company. And that's how I came up with the business that I have today.
And then we ate all your samples at Paleo FX.
Right. All of them.
I did. Stephanie stood there and looked at them, but
I kept taking the primal packs because Katie was near the primal
Yeah,
packs.
you
I was
did.
like, hey.
Yep. Yeah. So how long have you been, like, when did you transition into doing the whole real food paleo thing? Was that recently or was it a while ago?
So it was about that same time I kind of switched over my business first and then
Got it.
further continued on my own journey and like fully adopted grain-free paleo. And it's been a transition over several years, but now I'm like full on low carb paleo, and I just feel so great on it. Like there's no turning back now. It is amazing.
That's awesome. So, did you actually see a difference in your readings, like when you were testing blood sugar from like the difference between the two when you were eating, I guess, the traditional diet than versus paleo?
Oh yeah, I mean
Really?
it's huge. Yeah, the idea is kind of, there's this idea called the theory of small numbers. So if you're eating a huge amount of carbohydrates and then you have to take a huge amount of insulin to cover it, it's way harder to be in control. There's just too many variables. And so if you reduce the amount of carbohydrates and you're eating real foods that have good amounts of fiber and then, you know, a lot of healthy fats and protein, that all makes it just so much easier to deal with. And then I feel better and my blood sugars are like the best that they've ever been.
Hmm. That was really cool.
Yeah.
So let's get on to our bonus question. And Stephanie, you can answer first. And
then, woo!
And then, and then Katie, you can, and I'll finish this out. All right. So our bonus topic is, what is the number one most impactful dietary change you've made when it comes to health and happiness and all of those things?
Whoa.
The number one. So the top thing, the thing.
Well, paleo, obviously. I'm just kidding. Paleo was not the answer for me. But I really want to be like, well, I added liver and bone broth and all of my problems went away.
It is liver for you, huh?
Liver and bone broth. The most impactful dietary change for me, when I figured out that I couldn't eat potassium anymore, that was like the biggest, most, the important, best ray of hope I've ever had in my life. A lot of you, I think, know this, but I took a drug called spironolactone several years ago, and as a result, I suffered from really bad, really, really bad insomnia and anxiety and panic attacks. And my blood pressure was high. My heart beat really fast and hard. Like, you know that when you get like super terrified and you can feel your heart like beating, or you run really, really fast, you can feel it hitting your chest and you can hear it, like you can feel it in your ears. I felt like that for like 2.5 years. So when I figured out that potassium was a big part of the problem, those problems started to go away. So that was really big for me. And of course that means that I can't eat things like a lot of leafy greens, and I can eat some avocados, and you know, I'm experimenting with bringing them back in slowly. But anyway, that was big for me. The most important dietary change for me was when I ate the cookies that Katie makes. I should have said that first, obviously. Well, I saved the best for last. Okay, those are the things.
What was the flavor on that? Was it the caco nibs or what?
Yeah, oh, I don't know. Amazing.
It
I
was think so was good.
Yeah. No, there was chocolate in it because I was like, oh my God, chocolate.
Yeah.
And it was made out of almond flour. So I didn't eat a ton because I didn't want to get depressed because almonds. Nuts in high quantity depressed me. If I ate the whole bag, that might have been a problem. But yeah. I had a few and my roommates just ate everything, so.
So, Katie, what you got? What do you
think? Okay, so I'm going to bend the rules a little bit. And instead of saying a dietary change, I'm going to say just a change. And that is, well, I really want to say it's that I stopped listening to my doctors. But really what I think I mean is that I started looking further. And I was looking for my own answers and did my own research to take my health into my own hands and believe that there was a better way. And then I also have to credit Miss Stephanie Ruper for teaching me to believe in my body again and that it wants to heal. And even though it will never heal the autoimmune disease that I have, in all the other ways, it is working in my favor, and I need to listen to it and nourish it and believe in it again.
Yay, Stephanie Ruper.
Team Yay. Stephanie.
Oh, dang. Now you're like two, I'm zero.
Don't even. The
okay,
first
I'm
one picked
yeah,
you
I am one.
Explicitly.
I'm one.
Last time you just decided on a tie. That was you just being nice.
Yeah. It's okay. Okay. So I'm going to bend the rules a little on this one too. There's a lot. I think it was a combined.
But what about bone broth?
What about fermented cod liver oil? So I had a pretty rough transition into paleo. Paleo did not, well, it solved a lot for me. Like the food is a big part of my story, and that's why we're passionate about the ancestral lifestyle and eating real food. So food was a big part of it for me, but I when I first started paleo, I started really cracking out on nuts and like nut butters, and I wasn't necessarily doing it properly. Like I was a vegetarian for a really long time, and so I was having a hard time integrating meat back into my life. And when we made our last move, my husband came home from being away. Well, he was gone for a year, which that was a big part of it. I was lonely, and so like I was having a really hard time just with anxiety. And when we moved here, we started really seeking out local, like eating locally. And I started really putting red meat into my diet because I hadn't until then. So I went for probably 2 to 3 years on a paleo diet without really eating red meat. And when I did eat red meat, it would be like maybe a roast of some sort. And I would sometimes eat maybe like, I don't know, a pork butt or something. And that would just be sporadic. And I would never really feel that good because they were still all grain fed. And that is a problem for me. So when I did that, that drastically changed everything. But that change, so eating a lot of the red meat and the grass-fed, well, basically eating grass-fed and pasture-raised things, when that change actually coincided with a change in my exercise, and I finally just let go. This was, I guess, I mean, more recent. This was more like 3.5 years ago. I finally let go of cardio. Like I was like hard and fast on it all the time. Like I could not let it go. And we'd go and do these great workouts, and I felt like I had to like jump on the elliptical and do the elliptical for 45 minutes because I thought that was the only way that I was going to lose weight. And when I stopped doing that, so I just went in and did the workout. So I just lifted and I was like, what do I want to do? And I just did what I wanted to do. And I dropped the cardio and said, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm going to trust all the research I've been reading. I'm just going to do a few sprints. I'm going to let myself rest more, like reduce stress more. My mentality changed and I dropped maybe 20, 25 pounds over the course of 6 to 8 months. So, and after that session, after that, then I was like, I've been so much more balanced mentally and physically. So, nice. So cardio, not nice. Saying that cardio is bad or that cardio is making everybody fat, just wasn't good for me. And Stephanie hates it. So don't.
I do. Although I do about 3 hours of cardio a day. So,
you know, so, I don't know. Is that more like interval training? Because you like do a dance and then you stay on the wall and watch people and wait for somebody to come ask you, and then, or do you dance
like
the whole time?
I'll stand by the wall and wait for people to come ask me.
Horrible analogy. I admit. Horrible analogy.
I mean, sometimes it happens because there aren't a lot of people, but like last night, I didn't sit down once. I danced for 3 hours straight. It often depends on who's there and what's going on. So.
Your life is so fascinating.
If by fascinating you mean so amazingly fun, yes.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we have, Katie is being so awesome to give us, I think you have a coupon code, right, for people
yes.
to try your stuff. So there, you don't just make cookies, right? I think I was, although that's what we seem to be obsessed with. I in particular ate plenty of granola. I think there too, your no grain granola, which is just unbelievably out of this world. And my husband has devoured the bag that I got. So we have a coupon code for basically all the food that you make, right?
Yep.
Cool. So what's your website address?
So it is keepitrealfoodcompany.com.
Awesome.
And the coupon code is paleo women, all caps, no space. And that will get you 10% off.
Cool. Thanks for doing that.
Yeah. Thanks
really
for
sweet.
Having me.
Yeah. So Stephanie, you have any other updates, anything to say to the audience at large?
No, I love you guys.
Cool.
Ladies.
We love you too. That's what I'm assuming.
I meant them, but I also mean you.
I was speaking for them. All right. That's it for us today. If you could, please head over to iTunes and leave us a review. It would be awesome to see what you think and to hear from you. So thank you in advance if you choose to do so. Also, if you want to drop us a question and you have something that you want us to talk about, you can email us at paleowomenpodcast@gmail.com. For more from us, you can find Stephanie at paleoforwomen.com and me, Noelle, at coconutsandkettlebells.com. Talk to you next week.